Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I am joined by two guys I just adore on the Ottawa Senators beat, the one and only Julie McKenzie of The Athletic and Graham Nichols of the Hockey News. How are you guys? I know last night was kind of a crazy game, but thanks so much for coming on this show and kind of rekindling our talks at Sens practice. So I think this will be a fun one.
That wasn't that Sens practice. What the f we
No, well,
talk at Sens
typically,
practice?
no, at Sens practices. Come on, guys. What
Oh,
are we saying?
okay. The way you phrased it, I assume you were referring to yesterday. I'm like, man, I wasn't there, dude.
In general,
Ice
in
cold.
general.
Ice cold. Ice cold. I'm like, I don't know what kind of talks you and Julian were having, but I wasn't privy to them. So,
I think Alex likes to believe you're in spirit. You're there in spirit when you're not there at
Yes.
practice. So
Yeah,
he thinks of you
exactly.
very highly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh man, I'm glad I wasn't at the game last night. It looked off to watch the first 8 minutes, first 7 8 minutes. I'm like, oh, okay. And then the Avalanche responded, scored a goal, and I'm just like, oh God, here we go. And just
Isn't that a
everything.
sign of like how good this team? I mean, duh, of course it's a sign of how good this team is. Like the fact that the Ottawa Senators could play as well as they did those opening first few minutes, and I thought at the very least, even if Colorado might still win the game, it might be like a 4-2 situation or a 2-1 situation. And then those goals just kept coming, man. Like,
Yeah.
just they found, like, once Nathan MacKinnon got that first shot on goal, it was just like one-way traffic for the rest of that period and much of the rest of the game, if we're really being honest.
Yeah. No, I was at, like obviously Colorado played the night before against Toronto, but like the first like 5 to 7 minutes, you're like, oh man, Ottawa looks really good. But in the back of your mind, you're keeping the context in mind. You're like, okay, maybe it's if the Avalanche get their legs and if Ottawa doesn't score soon, like this could be another lost opportunity. I'm like, how many times have we seen that this year, especially like early on in the season where it's like, okay, like this is a stretch where the team's playing really well, but they're just not burying their chances. And like, I don't know, like you guys were there in person, but on TV, it looked like just again, it's like we've been talking about this through the course of the season. It's just like good offensive players just weren't shooting the puck at key moments. They were looking for the extra pass, and it's just like, oh, okay, here we go, here we go. They're missing their chances early, and they're opening the door for Colorado. And then you're right, Julian. Like as soon as Colorado got one, it just like it started an avalanche of goals. And then as soon as they got the power play after it was 2-0, you're like, oh God, we haven't even gotten to their power play yet, and what do you know? The Makar scores, and you're just like, okay, this one's toast.
The tough thing too is like Linus Ullmark in those first 5 to 7 minutes was good. He was
Yeah.
making good saves. Like the Sens didn't start well against Montreal earlier this week, so you knew it was important for them to start off on the right track. And even if they weren't converting on those chances, like when your number one goalie, who's looked good at different points, but maybe so-so at other times this month, but has looked good in some key moments last week, like you're thinking maybe this could be a continuation of that. Then that first goalie allows just like a weird dribble through the legs, and then everything just again one-way traffic after that. Like that was as deflating of a stretch we've seen in a while. Like it got to a point later in the game you're starting to hear fans like groan and boo when they're taking too long to take a shot. Like it was like a weird, like, not deja vu, but like it had been a while since we'd seen the Sens not look as great and be kind of flat, really. Like, and they've had games in the winning streak where they didn't look as good, but just the fact that they came out the way that they did was just not like we were getting used to. I was getting used to this Sens team winning and finding ways to win, even if they weren't the best team on the ice all the time. I was getting used to that.
Yeah.
I think that what's really interesting is that, and we've talked about it before, it's like this team just played two runs, right? They win five in a row, lose five in a row, right? And I think some of the groaning from the fans, at the game and also maybe online and watching is like, uh-oh, here we go again. Here's another five game skid, right? And when you play so poor like they did against, albeit a really good Avs team that we mentioned before, that's like, it's like if they lose against New Jersey, then they play Buffalo, who they've struggled against this year, and then like you start slipping down in the standings. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they rebound from this game, because I think this was probably one of their worst games of the season by far. Maybe I can't really think of another game where they've been like pretty healthy and been so flat. So I think that's what they really need to mitigate. But it was interesting Brady Tkachuk saying like there's no panic in the room. Now, maybe you still lose another couple in a row and you're not panicked. It doesn't really matter unless you win. But I think that's probably the right mindset, right? Like it was a dud against a good team. And I think if you kind of get too low and down on yourself like this team has in the past, you start seeing the skid kind of coming. So I think it was the right mindset, but we'll see if they can rebound. And I think that game against New Jersey, it could be a bit of a domino whether they kind of right the ship or not.
You guys said some interesting things. Like, I think Julian's right. Like, even when that team was playing really well and winning games in that little stretch that they had, they weren't playing good hockey. Like, they were finding ways to win. It was like, like good teams find ways to win even when they're not playing well. I think to Ottawa's credit, like, Allmark would put together some games. They were getting some good secondary scoring. Finally, the second line looked phenomenal. And they were winning games that way. But I'm kind of concerned in the sense that I know, like, if the players aren't concerned, like, it's kind of been like the way that they've been all season, but for me, it's like they haven't really played, and teams, all, it's hard to play full 60. It's hard to play complete full 60, but if, like, there's been stretches, like even when they're winning games, it's like there would be those lulls, those mental lapses, poor line changes, like just uncharacteristic turnovers or giveaways or defensive breakdowns where you're like, oh, what's happening right now? I know you're right. And Alex, like to your point too, it's like this team has tendencies to go on winning streaks and then they'll respond right away with a losing streak. And it's like, well, where is this team? Obviously they're not as good as their, like an extended winning streak. They're not as bad as an extended losing streak. But like they gotta, if this team's gonna peak at the right time for the postseason, like they gotta get rid of this like inconsistent. It is a consistent because it's a pattern of behavior, but like they gotta play better hockey. And it they have to just get on this upswing. And I'm concerned because like the tough war, if Nick Jensen's not playing, it's like that's a huge concern. Like
I
you're
agree.
concerned about his health and everything else, and you don't want to rush him back too early. But like, man, I don't like we've beaten the Travis Hamonic thing to death. But like, you can't. It's not a playoff team if he's in the top four. It's like you can't play that guy top 4 minutes. It's just it's an unmitigated disaster, and I think we saw a lot of that last night.
But like I think it's worth asking now, is it worth moving like Mattanpalo up? I don't know if he's necessarily been like I mean, look, I get Travis Hamonic, you're right. We've beaten that to death. We know what he is as a defenseman. If you put like Shabbat and Mattanpalo, is that going to be any better? Is Dennis Gilbert doesn't play on his right side. He's a left shot defenseman. Like, how do you make that work? Like, I mean, that's on Travis Green to figure out, not us, but it feels like Hamonic is just being, he's being pressed in that top four situation because what else are you going to do in that spot? You kind of just have to wait it out until Nick Jensen is a little bit healthier. That being said, to Alex's point about New Jersey being that game where, maybe it's time to worry a little bit, I still think it's that Buffalo game. If the Ottawa Senators know they're not going to win every game, and even if their losing skid goes to three games after a loss against New Jersey, okay, you've lost three in a row. It also depends on what the standings look like, right? Like they lost yesterday against Colorado. Montreal loses in overtime. They're still 3 points up on them. If you're in a situation where like Montreal's like a point behind after the weekend, that accentuates that worry a little bit. If you lose to Buffalo on Tuesday, a team that is in the basement, a team that is, I mean, they might not even make the playoffs next year with the way that they're looking. They're good. They have some good players. It's just something is in the water there that is keeping them from being great. If this Senators team can't beat the Buffalo Sabres, then I think we're going to see a level of panic that, at least among the fan base, that will make whatever panic you're feeling against New Jersey look pedestrian by comparison. I just think with where Buffalo's at, the misfortunes they've had all year, and where Ottawa is at and where they feel they should be, if it gets to that point, then you start looking under the hood and you're like, okay, what's wrong? Why can't we beat this Buffalo Sabres team? Three times. It would have been three times. They're 0-2 against the Sabres this season. It would be three times if they lose against the Buffalo Sabres on Tuesday. That to me is a much bigger concern versus a win or a loss against New Jersey.
And it's also like a hugely emotional game for like Dylan Cousins, right? Like you want, as a new
100%.
teammate, you're playing his old team. Like I think everybody in that room kind of recognizes, like, hey, we want to win this game for Dylan. Like that's like, I know you want to win every game, but like there's an extra, I think there's like an extra layer of meaning to this one. And you're right, Julian. Like that's a game that they have to have. You got a Buffalo team that's just It's essentially just swirling the drain. They have a lot of young talent, like you mentioned, and you have to win that game. And the stakes are going to be massive. And I like, you know, whether it's you play Washington in the first round or potentially Florida, like, I don't know. I don't think, I don't know if the Senators have a preference, but like, you got to play better. And it's super frustrating to watch. Super, super frustrating to watch. And
The one thing that Colorado, obviously, they're a really good team, and they accentuated kind of Ottawa's maybe problems is that they, and Graham and I have talked about this a lot, just, at games. It's like Ottawa doesn't seem to deal well with fast teams. And Travis Green alluded to it post game, like that they couldn't really handle their forecheck and their speed of Colorado. And I think Buffalo, I think a reason why they've kind of had Ottawa's numbers, they are a fast team. Obviously, they're not very good at the same time, but they're good at kind of getting in behind defenders and getting in transition. Where, like, if you look at Ottawa's forward group, a lot of good defensive players, but there's not a lot of burners outside of maybe Timmy and I guess now Zetterlund and Cousins to some degree, but like Perron and Giroux, like those guys aren't fleet of foot. So, the other interesting thing you were talking about, like how the Sens in March, like obviously they went on that 7-0-1 stretch. Like they weren't, if you look at their underlying numbers, they weren't very good. And I think the biggest concern for me is more the defensive side. Like they start to score more, which is obviously good. They were really struggling before, the month of March and like the bottom third of the league. But now they're basically giving up goals at such a higher rate, giving up chances at a much higher rate. Some of that I think is obviously Jensen being banged up and then obviously, being leaving for a couple games and having Travis Hamonic in the top four. But I haven't loved their defensive play, especially at 5-on-5. Their PK's been all right until the last two games. So that's the other thing that like that's what was the calling card of this team was just really low event hockey. And now they're kind of winning games instead of 2-1, it's like 4-3, 5-3. At the end of the day, you just have to win the game. But I think that's another area that I think we've seen them kind of get away from and be punished a little bit against Montreal and against the Colorado.
yeah, I was looking at Ottawa's defensive, like just the defensive pairing numbers since like I think it was like March 1st or whatever. So it's like the last six, eight games. And like Nick Jansen and Chabot were horrendous. Like I know we talk about like belaboring the point about like Hamonic with Chabot and how often they get caved in their own end. And like Chabot and Jensen, like the numbers are terrible too. I think it's like 35% Corsi. Like it's just like they're spending a lot of time in their own end. I don't know if like Chabot's dealing with something or anything, but like his game in particular, you know, if you're talking about skilled talent players on the team, I feel like his game slipped considerably in the last like month and a half from where it's been. Like I know he gets a lot of tough love from the fan base here for like some of the mistakes that he makes defensively and everything else, but like he's nowhere close to the level that he was at earlier in the season. I think this team's relying really, really heavily on like the Zub Sanderson pairing right now. And I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I don't like you talked about Matt and Paolo coming up potentially. Maybe like Cleven can play as offside on the second pairing. Maybe that's something they'd explore. Maybe put Gilbert in on the third pairing with Matt and Paolo and just kind of shake it up a little bit. But like games like last night, like you guys were there. So I'm kind of curious to get your insight here. First-hand account of what happened. But like in a blowout game like that, Julian, like, you know, when it's like 4-0, all of a sudden Zetterlund starts getting shifts with like the top two lines to see what he can do, find some chemistry. And then I don't think they touched their defense, right? Like Hamonic pretty much still played exclusively with Chabot. They weren't goofing around with like Matt and Paolo or anything like that. So I'm just curious to hear what you guys thought about maybe Matt and Paolo and Zetterlund.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't touch the defense. It was all about the forward lines being jumbled up. I think when they put Zetterlund with Kachuk and Stützle, to their credit, whether they had Greg or Zetterlund on their line, they were like the best with Corsi. Like they were the best at 5-on-5. It's just you want more offense generated from those two guys, and those two guys in particular have been very critical of their game. And Kachuk, when people were making a big deal about him not getting enough hits, at least he got a few, but like you need him to be more engaged in those games. Stützle, I have a little bit more of a concern about. I think he only has like two shots on goal in his last five games. Like, for such a dynamic player who is committing to play to playing a 200-foot game, and I know he got an assist on the Dylan Cousins goal yesterday, you need him to be that guy. Like, we I
I
haven't
told him to rip it. He's got to shoot more. I told him that on the Come In and Hot Podcast. I'm like, man, you got a good shot. You got to rip it. Like,
He
just rip
has to
it.
shoot more. He has to show off more of that dynamic element of his game. Like he had that really nice spin pass to Fabian Zetterlund yesterday. But like I think it's been a while since we've seen Tim Stützle play like the game breaker that he is. And if this team wants to look legit when they enter the playoffs, that means Tim Stützle has to elevate his game. And again, he said it himself. He knows he needs to be better. He knows his line needs to be better. He said that yesterday morning, him and Giroux together. Also, side note, Claude Giroux, like, what did you guys think of the fact that like there was like a whole stretch of the second period he didn't play? Like it was kind of like a weird like mini benching, sort of not a benching,
Could be
but
like
he
load
kind of got
management
locked.
maybe for a vet. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was like it turned into like load management slash getting lost in the shuffle with all that shuffling going on with some of the different lines, right? Like I think it was just kind of a product of that. I think he only played like 10 minutes throughout that game, but yeah, you need your top players to play at a high level. And that means a guy like Brady Tkachuk, you know, looking like what we've seen from him at the Four Nations and the little bit of play after that. And Tim Stützle, who at times, like, remember, he had that point streak going for him. Like, he needs to get back on track with that as well. He hasn't scored since earlier this month when he won the game in overtime against Chicago. Like, those guys, for me, they need to step up more than anyone else on this team. And with that defense, I mean, make whatever changes you can make, but it's starting to look like when we get to the playoffs, because it looks like the Senators are going to make it. It looks like it's virtual certainty right now. That defense is going to be an Achilles heel for this team. Sanderson and Zub are a good pairing. Shabbat and Jensen, when Jensen's healthy, will need to be better. And you're just hoping that third pairing of Klevin, Mäntypalo, don't get eaten alive by whatever opposition you're going up against. I think we're going to start looking at that defense in that way in a seven game series. I could be wrong, though. I could be wrong.
No, I think you're bang on.
I think it's you look at the way Travis Green deploys Klevin and Mäntypalo. It's a lot of offensive zone draws. They've a lot of the time it's with the Timmy line starting in the offensive zone. So you can tell like he's kind of like putting his defense in the best possible position to succeed. And even then, their numbers are pretty middling. I don't think that pairing's been awful, but again, like if they're against like Panthers depth or even the Washington's depth, like I'm a bit concerned. Like it's interesting, like even at the deadline, right? Stamkos went out and made his forward group much deeper. That's why Fabian Zetterlund's on the fourth line. But I think moving forward, not just for this year but next year, I think that's the biggest area of kind of growth. I think obviously you want Tyler Cleven to take a step, maybe Carter Yastrzemchuk is in the fold in a year or two from now, but overall, I think that's going to be the biggest area where hopefully this team adds and brings in some more talent, like a guy like maybe Nick Jensen instead of playing on the second pair as your third pairing defenseman. And I think that's a almost a much better role for him. But I think yeah, I think Julian's right. Like that's going to be probably the Achilles heel of this team in a weird sense, is maybe their lack of production at 5-on-5, which they've still struggled with. But gone much better since acquiring Cousins and Zetterlund. But I think that third pairing and whether Shabbat and Jensen or whoever his partner is, if they can kind of rekindle what was working in the first half of the year, because as Graham mentioned, like if you look at Shabbat and Jensen until the new year, their underlying numbers are excellent. Since January 1st, they're almost worse than the third pairing. Like they are getting caved in, and I think Jensen's
That
been
probably
banged up.
coincides. That probably coincides with his injury, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Yeah,
But like,
so.
just watching last night's game, like to your point about handling speed, like their breakout last night was awful. It essentially could like they couldn't handle the pressure. They couldn't handle the speed and the pressure because every time they did, the defensemen were either flipping the puck up in the air or they were going for that Hail Mary pass down the sidewall, waiting for a tip between the red line and the blue line, where the puck just goes back into the Colorado zone. And it's just like if those plays aren't available, they had nothing going. It was just turnover city and lots of congestion in the neutral zone. Colorado adjusted their game after the first 5, 10 minutes. And Ottawa was just, it was terrible to watch. Terrible,
And
terrible to watch.
to your point, Graham, I think some of what you were talking about, I think some of that was there in the Montreal game too, especially in the first few minutes of that game. Yeah, their breakouts and the way they exit their zone, that needs to improve over these next few games. Absolutely. This team needs more crisper passes. Just needing to get back to, they'll tell us probably today at practice, they just got to keep things simple and all that. We've heard that before, but there's some truth to that. I think they need to focus on that these next few games.
God, if they lose to Buffalo and New Jersey, and then they got that huge game against Detroit, like, Oh man, it's a huge week. Like
Yeah.
I don't want to
No, but you're
like
right.
overemphasize. I don't
You're
want to
right.
overemphasize and like get too like, oh God, here we go again. But like, man, like you could swing a lot of momentum with a win or two this week. Just
Like
nip everything in the
you've
bud. Don't congest the standings. Like you built up a points cushion, which is great, but like you want to give Nick Jansen as many days off as you can down the stretch too, like or even like resting some of the guys up front. Like I'm sure guys are dealing with stuff. Like Brady hasn't really looked himself since Four Nations either. So if there's an opportunity to give guys a rest, man, like just keep picking up some points, even if they're loser points. Just get points now.
The one thing I
Like,
will, yeah, sorry, Julian.
no, Alex, you go ahead.
No, the one thing I would say is like to maybe not take one game, make it too big of a thing. Like they've only lost two in a row, right, in regulation, and like I think we've hit it on the nail, right? If this team loses three, four, five in a row, then you start to panic, and we're in the media, we're in nature of what just happened, but I think I'm not too worried at this point because Colorado is a wagon. Like if they had lost 5-1 and played that poorly against New Jersey or Buffalo, then I'd be like, uh-oh, this is, concerning. And then when they lost to Montreal, they should have won that game, although they probably weren't the better team for the majority of it. But they had been getting a lot of bounces, right? They came back against New York. They should have won that game, but they came back. They came back against Washington. Detroit, obviously, they stole that game. Like a lot of things were kind of going their way, and it seems like there's that proverbial like regression to the mean, right? And so let's see. But I think, as Graham said, if they can nip it in the bud, if they can go 2-3 in their next three games against Detroit, Buffalo, New Jersey, I think they're going to be in a really good spot with their home stretch coming up. And like they're like the teams behind them aren't very good. Like that's the other thing. Right, like what New York's went lost three, four in a row. The Islanders are rising, but I don't know
But
if
some teams are going on like PDO heaters, right? Like Montreal's getting it done, even though like their possession numbers aren't great. Like they're finding ways to win. Like they're just getting good goaltending. They're scoring on their shots, and it's just, I don't know, man. It's just that squirrely time of year, and you're just running out of real estate. Like you gotta. I guess like the frustrating part for me is like third place is always feels like whenever the Senators play well, it's like just like within their grasp, and then it's just slide, and then they fall out of it. Like. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like when they do go on these like extended stretches of like just not winning games, it's like they're not even getting loser points. And it's just kind of they scuffle a little bit more than they should, which is frustrating, but it's hockey too. So I don't know, man. I think there's a lot of pressure on this team right now to turn it around, but I'm curious to see what the guys say at practice today.
The good thing for them is that they're in the driver's seat. Brady Tkachuk earlier this week said that they control their own destiny, and he said that he doesn't do a lot of scoreboard watching, which well, I don't know if that's true, but like I mean, look, the fact that they are still in that top wild card spot, the fact that the Canadians are still 3 points behind them, and Alex is right. There's a lot of teams behind them that are not that great. You think of the Rangers with only 3 wins in their last 10, the Blue Jackets with 3 wins in their last 10, 2 wins in their last 10. That's Detroit. Like, so many teams are in that rearview mirror right now, and Ottawa built up this cushion to push them further back. Where if this Sens team loses 3 in a row, yeah, you could feel a little nervous, but if everyone else is still bad, you don't have to feel nearly the same amount of anxiety. And there's an alternate world where the Ottawa Senators are fighting to get themselves into that playoff picture, and they're shit out of luck. Like
And but like
I think Senators would rather take this reality.
there's three games left against Columbus too, right? Like, like they're every game, like if you look at Ottawa's schedule, like every game down the stretch, like obviously with Buffalo, it's a little bit different because they're not playing anything. I think New Jersey's kind of going through some seeding issues of their own, in terms of like where they stand in the standings. But like, man, it's just every game down the stretch is important. Like there's gonna be teams fighting for it, like it's gonna be a little dogfight playing against some of these teams. Like Columbus, for example, and Montreal and Buffalo, Carolina's there. Like, there's a little bit of jockeying. So, like, some of these games do mean something. So, even if Ottawa's scuffling a bit, at least their opposition, like, these games are meaningful to them. So, like, going into the postseason, assuming Ottawa can get there, like, these games have meaning in the sense that, like, at least Ottawa's playing meaningful games down the stretch. Maybe they just, like, I'm just concerned, like, if this team built up enough of a points cushion, they can kind of coast in the postseason, which I don't necessarily want to see. I want these guys playing with an edge, playing with a little sense of urgency. And I think maybe this, even though they're dropping a few games here and there, maybe this can work to their benefit going into the postseason.
I wonder if the fact that like this team, I think of when a couple weeks ago I put up a post from Tankathon saying that they had the easiest strength of schedule, and it may still be the case today on March 21st. But I remember when I put that up, and fans were getting at me being like, "Well, what's the record against non-playoff teams? They still make me feel really nervous," and they were right to feel that way because at that point they hadn't beaten Montreal and they hadn't beaten Buffalo. And talking about teams that are remaining on their schedule, I know there's at least one more game against Montreal. There's at least two more games against Buffalo. Pittsburgh and Philly are definitely in that schedule. Detroit is next week. You mentioned those three games against Columbus. There are ample opportunities for this Ottawa Senators team to kind of change that narrative. I don't know if they necessarily would view that as like something they need to change. They're seeing that as, they need to get these wins so they can just get themselves into the playoffs. But I think the fact that even if their schedule looks like it's supposed to be easy, there's a really good opportunity for the Senators to just pick up those points and prove to themselves that, like, hey, you know what? Like, anyone you put in front of us, we can beat. You don't want to be that team. I mean, sometimes it's cool if you're able to go toe to toe against some of the best teams, but it looks really bad when you look real good against Washington and then you look real bad against Buffalo, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think for there's an opportunity for the Senators team to change that narrative.
I think, in my opinion, it's just get to April and be in a good position because this team has been is essentially a 500 team out on the road, and they're like, what, like a 680 winning percentage, 700 winning percentage at home, right? And so if they can just kind of, as Graham said, pick up points, not lose too many games in regulation, just like keep track with the rest in terms of keeping that lead at 5, 4, 5, 6 points. In within a playoff spot, I think then, as you said, like they play Philly, they play Columbus, they play Chicago at home. Like the schedule's pretty easy. Like, and at the same time,
Even that Carolina game on the 17th, I think like that's a load management game for Carolina, probably. Like that'd be a game where you probably see the backup goaltender. You're probably not seeing the top guys play a lot of minutes too. So like there's I think
There's a
the
Chicago
circumstances
game
really
in there
control.
too. They end their season, I think, against Chicago as well. Like, there's a lot of games where you would say, quote unquote, are easy. No game is really easy in the NHL, but there's still plenty of opportunities for this team to pick up points.
Margin for error is a lot bigger for sure.
Like from my vantage view, like this team is definitely better, I think, with Dylan Cousins in place of Josh Norris. Like, what have you guys kind of seen from Cousins so far, and why do you think he's been like a much better fit, it seems like, than maybe Josh Norris?
Go ahead, Julian. You can go first, man.
Like imposing, constantly winning battles, goes to the front of the net, can win battles there too. Just has offensive ability, could help create offense too. Like I think Josh Norris for that core, I understand why he means so much to them. I liked his skill set with the Ottawa Senators in terms of being an all situations player who can block shots, but I think Dylan Cousins has proven to be a really good fit for that Senators team in the middle in that second center pairing. I say pairing because I just constantly think of him with Drake Batherson. You could put anyone else to their left. David Perron almost looked really good with those guys, but clearly there's something with Cousins and Batherson. Not saying they've generated every single point between both of them, but they've at least established that there's chemistry between those two guys. And the fact that Cousins has been able to find himself a home on the power play as well, like this trade on the early onset, like looks like a home run for Steve Staios. Like I think he's had a point in all but one game since joining at the trade deadline. This is a player who still also has room to grow in his mid-20s, right? Like this looks like a real good take for the Ottawa Senators, and you're seeing a rejuvenated player who finally gets to play in these games, finally has an opportunity to play to play for an opportunity to be in the postseason. Like I get it. Like the stats for the last two seasons don't look that great, but you can't tell me that playing in a market where you're out of the playoffs at a certain point in the year and it's just dreadful all the time, like you can't tell me that doesn't play a role in why your statistics sag off. Like I know Sabres fans have been really upset, but like I think that's the truth. That's absolutely the truth. And just sad to see the Sabres as they are right now. They scored a goal on themselves yesterday against Utah. It is not going well in the land of Buffalo right now. It would make anyone not play at their absolute best. So to see Dylan Cousins in an environment that has improved significantly this year compared to years past, no wonder he's been playing well since he joined the Ottawa Senators.
I think our Sam McKee tweeted at, I think there was like a Sport Logic post or something about Dylan Cousins being like one of like the best at zone entries points since he's become an Ottawa Senator. And he just said the new Sam Reinhart just dropped. And I just thought, like, you just look at it, it's like Reinhart, Montour, obviously Eichel, Ryan O'Reilly, like all those guys have thrived since leaving Buffalo. And it just seems like it's the same story with Dylan Cousins. I don't know if he's going to get 50 goals or, you know, be as good as Jack Eichel was or is. But I think the fact that Steve Steos was able to pry him out of Buffalo for, you know, Josh Norris, who's a good player, but probably overall isn't as impactful as Cousins, and you know, he kind of bought low, right, and sold high maybe on Norris, who's already injured, unfortunately, which has kind of been the story of his career. So I think Steve Steos deserves a lot of credit for that trade. And it's interesting, I don't know if you guys saw, but he was talking to, like, at a season ticket event yesterday, and he kind of mentioned how essentially Zetterlund was in, like, he was talking to San Jose about Zetterlund for like a bigger deal. And I wonder if that was Josh Norris, which there has been some reports about that, and then kind of obviously made the Cousins deal for Norris, and then came back and got Zetterlund. So I think a lot of tidy business for Steve Steos. And I think the one last thing on maybe Zetterlund would be, like, good teams have players playing lower down the lineup than you'd like, right? Like, that's why they're a good team. Like, look at Charlie Coyle. Like, he was the second line center in Boston, he's now the third line center in Colorado. And I think it's not apples to apples, but Zetterlund playing on the fourth line, like, that's kind of good team problems. Like, really good teams have guys that are too low down the lineup. So I think Sens fans and you know, people like will have to kind of get used to that. Like, Shane Pinto on a lot of teams could be farther up the lineup too, right? Like, he's been a really, really good third line center, and a lot of teams that are, you know, middling, he could easily be their second line center. So that's kind of what happens when you start morphing into a good team.
I still wonder though if, I mean, Travis Green has said at different points that like he's going to try to find minutes for Fabian Zetterlund, and there is an avenue where he can climb up the lineup. Is Saturday the opportunity where Travis Green says, you know what, let me shake up the lines a little bit? We saw that shuffling happening in that game against Colorado when things weren't going well. He saw that as his opportunity. Does he take that opportunity to make that a little bit more permanent on Saturday? And if not Saturday, when? Like, I asked the question, you know, why stick with the same lines after Montreal? He said, you know, this is the lines that give us the best chance to win. That didn't work. Do you go into Saturday with the same lines thinking, hey, you know what, this could still work? I don't know if I would do that, but this might be as good of a time as any for Fabian Zetterlund to find another spot somewhere in this lineup. I just think he's shown too much offense this year at the San Jose Sharks for the Senators to not at least give him an opportunity in a prime spot to showcase that. He's tried to establish chemistry with Tim Stützle. We know they live together. Does that mean he has to play on that top line right away? Not necessarily, but maybe that's an option. But I don't know, man. I think for him, you're right. Like there's the form of good problems for this team when a guy like Fabian Zetterlund has to climb his way up the lineup. But when you've paid that much for him and he has the offense that he has, like, at some point, I think this team has to try to put him in a position where he could succeed.
Yeah, I think I'm getting close to the point where it's like, I think I would slide Riley Gregg in as the fourth line center. Like, I think, like, say what you want about like Adam Gaudette, but like, you either move him out as a winger or just take him out of the lineup. Like, for me personally, if he's not going to be on the power play a lot anymore, like, he's just, I don't know if there's a huge role for him right now on this team. And I think, like, Riley Gregg, love him as a player, but he's just not producing a ton of points on the third line right now. So like, if you can make him the pivot on the fourth line, I think that improves the fourth line immeasurably. Then you can talk about possibly moving Perron back down, where he's had success with Pinto and Amadio before, and that. So I think that's the easiest avenue to get Zetterlund into the top six. Or like, he could You could easily play on the third line as well. But my concern with Pinto and Zetterlund on the same line together is that they're both kind of like trigger guys. They're both shooters. And I don't know if that's going to be a fit. And that kind of speaks to like Josh Norris's problems with the centers on the second line. Like he was just a trigger guy. Like he'd struggle to carry the puck through the neutral zone from blue line to blue line and create chances for his line mates. And I think that's why, like you guys were talking about Cousins earlier, I think that's why like Cousins fits this organization's philosophy a little bit better. Like he's more of a distributor. He goes to the dirty areas of the ice, big guy, and he's just a much better fit. And if the centers pick up some points down the stretch, I think like I agree fully with what you guys are saying about Travis Green shaking up the lineup, looking for opportunities to create guys, because I think you're right, Julian. Like they know they have success with certain pairings. It's more finding like, okay, if Claude Giroux is not going at his highest level right now, is he a good fit for the first line? Okay, if David Perron doesn't produce a little bit, would he be better off on the third line? And it's just kind of like just moving the chess pieces around. But I think like I agree wholeheartedly with your opinion that this is becoming like a very pairing centric forward group, and it's just about finding that third piece fit for each line. And maybe that's just a constant shuffling if the line's not going. And I think that might be what you see down the stretch here as the season winds down.
I kind of wonder where Claude Giroux's spot is on this line, in this lineup, if he's not playing with Timmy and
It's a good question.
Brady. Like, I don't know if it makes a lot of sense to put him on the left side with obviously Cousins and Batherson. Then are you putting him on the third line? I don't know if that makes a lot of sense with Pinto, Amadio, or Greg, however you want to put it. So I find that almost a really interesting storyline is like if there is a change up, and we saw Zetterlund playing, as Julian mentioned, when Giroux didn't play for like the majority of the end of the game. We saw Zetterlund up with Timmy and Brady, and he looked pretty good. That line was pretty good in their, a couple minutes. So, but where does Giroux fit in the fold if Zetterlund moves up? I think that's the interesting thing. I think I could see Perron maybe going down with Amadio and Pinto, and that line did really well analytically to begin the year. So I can kind of see that fit. And as Graham mentioned, putting Greg on the fourth, but yeah, I don't know where.
Giroux's point production, I will say, like I'm looking at natural stat trick right now. Like his point production is like marginally less than that of Drake Batherson. Obviously, Batherson spent his entire season playing predominantly with Josh Norris, but like that probably impacts it somewhat. But I thought that's kind of interesting. Like Claude's still getting points. I wish he would shoot like half the guys on the roster right now. I wish he would shoot the puck a lot more instead of passing up chances to set up his line mates. But
There's
I just wish there was more selfishness. Maybe that's like the biggest thing. Like even talking to Drake Batherson the other day, Alex, like you were with me. Brent Wallace asked him like that goal that he scored against Montreal. He's like, you really wanted to pass that puck, didn't you? He's like, God, yeah. It's like you're in this, and then he clued in. He's like, I'm in the slot. Jack Eye's just skating like he's just giving
have
me
all
so
this
much gap.
space.
Yeah, I have all this space. Look at the gap he's giving me. He's like, I have to shoot. And he shot and scored. It's like, I think like I like. There's so many talented offensive players on this team, and you look at the shot rates across this group, and they're all significantly different where they are like previous highs. And I just wish like they're guys with good shots and everything else. I just wish that they need to develop a Travis Hamonic fucking mentality out there. That's what we need. Just fuck, just
Maybe not slap
shoot the
shot.
rock, man. Shoot the rock, half clap it,
How is it that
something.
Travis
Give me
Hamonic
something.
is like the only one on this team who's like, damn it, I want to shoot? And everyone else is like, oh, I just want to pass, I want to pass, I want to pass, I want to pass.
I
How
want
is
to
that?
ask him.
How is
I
that's
want to ask the guys, like,
hilarious?
what's he like on the bench when you pass up those opportunities? Is he in your ear, like, giving it to you? Like, you guys got to shoot. Like,
I just want to bring up one thing though, because Alex brings up, he brought up a really interesting question. Where does Claude Giroux fit in the fold? And I don't know if it's too early to start wondering about what that means beyond this season, because he's a pending UFA and he's 37 years old. He's playing at a high level, but is Claude Giroux the guy you need in your top six at his age now? And are you willing to give him like 4.5, maybe 5 mil on a 1 or 2 year deal to make that happen? Or would you rather, keep your 18 mil plus in cap space, go and get that depth defender you need, and then say, hey, you know what? We're trying to get Michael Granlund, or we're trying to get another top six winger who can play with Tim Stützle. I don't think it's too early to start wondering about that question. I know that's been a storyline throughout this year, too. And depending on how that line shuffling goes, if it gets to that point with this team, I think that only adds to that question of Claude Giroux's future and whether it makes sense to keep him and how much it should cost to keep him and what both sides want. I would think that with how things are going, I think Claude Giroux still wants to play. And I would imagine he probably still wants to play in Ottawa. This is just my read of it. This is not like intel or anything. This feels very much like the ball is in Ottawa's court type of deal. Like, how do they view this team going forward? How much younger do they want to get? Where do they think Claude Giroux could play in this lineup? And if they do make changes and they put Claude Giroux further down the lineup and they want to keep him, that could be a window into the future. Anyway, that could be a conversation for a completely different day, but I can't help but think about Claude Giroux's future with this stretch of games left in the playoffs to come.
I think, like, spitballing, I think philosophically, I think you're bang on. I think the luxury that Ottawa has is like all their young pieces are locked up for like the next
100%.
3, 4, 5 years. And like the cap's escalating. So,
Yeah.
like, their salaries will stay the same. So, like, every year they're going to get more and more cap space. And I think, like, you're bang on. It's like, I think if you're going to take this team from just being a playoff wildcard team, while all these young guys are in the prime and move this forward, you have to ask those big questions. It's like, how are we going to attract a top end player to get here and come and play? And I think, like, if you sold them on, hey, you can come to Ottawa and be the winger on Tim Stützle and Brady Tkachuk's line, like, that's a huge draw, right? Like, you talk about
100%.
Sam Reinhart, like, that might be something he might fucking really like doing. But like, a lot of guys like Florida as well. But like, those are like the kind of guys that you can bring in. You need like a good high end two way player, and you're probably gonna have to overpay to bring him to Ottawa. But those are like the philosophical questions. It's gonna be like, okay, we have this cap space. How are we gonna use it? I think, like, you guys are bang on from your points earlier where you mentioned, like, hey, we have to address the right side of the defense because you can't count on Artem Zub, Nick Jansen to be healthy. Nick Jansen's got 1 year left on his deal next year. He's an older player, so eventually you're gonna have to make room for them. And obviously they have Carter Yakimchuk coming, but I think, like, you're bang on, Alex. I think, like, you need to bring in another good quality right side guy because you can't do what happened this year. I think if there is a criticism of the Steyos regime from this offseason, I love the guys that they brought in. I thought they were all good fits. But I think the, like, one legitimate criticism is that they didn't address the depth on the blue line, the quality of depth on the blue line. And obviously Travis Hamonic's no movement clause plays a huge part in that, in the sense that didn't give him the flexibility to go ahead and find a replacement. But yeah, it's how do you manage the cap efficiently while you have to address that right side. Like, that's one thing. And then how do you address it moving forward on up of the forward group? And I think, like, with Claude Giroux, I feel like you could give him the third line right winger spot, and I'd be totally fine with him. You play him with like Shane Pinto next year. If he's making like 3.5, 4 million, that's fine. Like, that's David Perron money, right? Like, I think that wouldn't be
Yeah.
too offensive. And it depends on what he wants to do as well. If he wants to return to Ottawa, maybe he takes a ridiculous discount. Like, we've seen guys do that before if they really like it. Like, Patrice Bergeron, Boston was like that. If you really want to help a team manage their cap situation and push it towards contender status, like, maybe Claude Giroux is like, you know what, guys, like, I've made a lot of money in this league. I'm willing to take like next to nothing to continue playing because I want to win and I want to have fun doing it. And you talk to every person on that team, they love Claude Giroux. Like, they absolutely adore him. And they speak so highly of his leadership and his intangibles and just his high performance and his just drive and communication and everything else. Like, valuable, valuable piece to have. So maybe that's a situation where they say, okay, we'll bring Claude back on the third line. Michael Amadio, we're going to have to either find a spot for you on the fourth line, or we're going to ship you out in a deal to bring in a defenseman or something. You know, like, maybe that's the kind of move that they make. But I don't
Man,
know.
look, if I'm not in Claude Giroux's head, to me, it's either he's staying in Ottawa or nothing else. You're late in your career. You're on a team that is knocking at the door of playoff contendership. You still feel you're playing at a high level. You're working out with Tony Greco. Do you want to move your uproot your family again and chase a cup and go somewhere else? I don't know if he wants to do that again. He's showing that he can play at a high level, and this team is on the up. Again, with
It
no
would be weird. It
intel,
would be weird for him to
if
leave when this team's like making the playoffs now, right?
that's
Like, that'd
it.
be
That's
like,
what
yeah.
I'm thinking, right? Like, it's
Like,
one
that's
thing if
why
the
he came
Senators
here.
weren't
Yeah.
good. If the Senators
Yeah.
weren't, yeah, and to your point, Graham, that's like when I interviewed him earlier this year, that's exactly what he said. That's why he came here, because he knew this team was good. At this point, it's either Ottawa or nothing. That's what I think is going through Claude Giroux's head.
The other thing I would say, just thought about, like, we're talking about like the future of this team, like Graham kind of alluded to it, but I think it's really bright. Like, you have all these guys locked in for found money, like Stutz is underpaid, Sanderson's underpaid for a long time. Kachuk, obviously, we've heard all the rumors, but he still has 3 years on his deal. He's getting underpaid. Cousins,
And
if
there's no move kicks in July 1st. That's his, but like still, like he wants to stay here.
And Dylan Cousins, if this is real, which I think it is, like $7 million for a second line center, like you'll take that any day of the week. Like, what does Chandler Stephenson make? Right. So I think overall, like, if you look at the future of this team with the cap going up, like, there is, as Graham alluded to, like $18-19 million in cap space. The Giroux question will be really interesting, but they will have areas to consistently improve the roster with, just kind of buying. Like, I think they'll add a defenseman, maybe another forward. Like, you can see how they're rounding into shape. And, like, I was just looking at Colorado and thinking about, like, all the additions they made with, like, Coyle, Nelson. Like, I feel like I won't say that Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon are as good as Tim Stützle and Jake Sanderson are as good as those two, but I could almost see, like, the outline of that team, and I kind of looking over to Ottawa and being like, oh, I can see that happening in a couple of years where this team is really deep because of, their salary cap being so helpful for them with, the guys on those lower contracts. And I just see a really good future for this team, but they need to make the playoffs. If they miss out at this point, it's going to be a utter calamity, and we'll be talking about it. And I don't know what's next for the team if that were to
Stay
happen.
positive, Alex. Good
No,
God. Stay
I'm
positive,
just
man.
saying, but I can see it as almost like this year being like the breakthrough, and then, next year you start thinking, okay, let's try to win a couple rounds, and maybe they win a round this year, and then in 2 years you're like, okay, I think we're set up to be a real cup contender. I really see that pathway as a pretty viable option for this team, and I think that's what's really exciting about the Senators' future and what they've been doing this season.
I will say too, what's encouraging to me is like, I don't know how you guys felt about the deadline, in terms of like leading up to it. Like, I wasn't anticipating anything. Like, I didn't anticipate them. I thought it's like, okay,
Nope.
we'll add some fourth line players to like improve the fourth line, bolster the depth that way, because like they had to work the margins. They didn't have a ton of money, and to go out and take some swings like they did. Like, I like obviously like there were some Josh Norris rumors scuttling. Like Frank Saravelli was on the Coming in Hot podcast, and he was talking about how Norris's name is out there and how they're actively looking to move on from him. And I thought that was like a move that they could potentially look at doing in the offseason. But like, to be able to swing that kind of deal, of that magnitude, and willing to not only like take a chance on that talent, but actually like shake up the chemistry and core. Like, Josh Norris was absolutely beloved by his teammates and Brady Kachuk. And to have the courage and to kind of like, not, I don't think he was sending a message, but like, he wants to improve this team, and he's willing to take a risk to do it in a way that could, just kind of shake up the guys and give them a jolt. And for him to do that, I think it's just incredibly encouraging, for the future direction of this team, because like, this team should have, theoretically, they should have some money to play with. They should have some creative luxuries. And I think if you look at Stamos's pattern of moves in the short time that he's been here, like, most of them have been good fits. Like, I think whether it's like a Gaudette or a Perron or a Nick Jansen, like, not necessarily the splashiest moves out there, but like, they address some needs that they previously didn't have. And I think, like, just looking ahead to the offseason, if you're looking at ways to improve this team, I think that's encouraging. Have a GM and a director of analytics and Sean Tierney who can help kind of like spearhead that direction and keep it going on the upswing.
Yeah, the Senators, as far as I'm concerned, with what they did at the deadline, they did their part in trying to make this team better. And just understanding how Steve Staios handled that press conference at the deadline seemed like it was probably going to be quiet until the night before. It seemed like they were working on a few things. And then when that Cousins opportunity comes in the next day, or whenever in that timeline, like, that changes the whole swing of things. Just like you, Graham, I very much expected a quiet day, and then all of a sudden I'm looking out for Josh Norris and Jacob Bernard-Docker at practice that day. Like, everything just took a complete 180 shift,
Oh, it was
and
weird
we
too. Like,
it was
Alex and I
so
saw
wild.
Alex and I are literally sitting in a room watching the players come up the stairs, leave to go to the Bell Senseplex, and we see like Bernard Docker and Norris leave, and then like 2 seconds later, it's like, yeah, they're being held off the ice. We're like, We just saw them leave. Like we're shocked. Just shocked.
I was upstairs and I had seen, I think it was Shane Pinto, Anton Forsberg, someone else was on the ice and a coach. And all of a sudden, all four people on the ice just skated off like really quickly. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's weird. I don't normally see that. And then one by one, everyone starts to shuffle out, and you're like, huh, okay, that was, I got, you don't see that. It's one thing if it's like, all right, Travis Green's on the ice, everyone knows to go to him in on one corner of the ice, he's gonna drop a play, but like no one's there, and you're like, something's weird. This is really, really weird. And then a chain of events happens after that. Like, that's a deadline day that, I mean, it's wild, but like Steve Staios, no one expected him to do anything. And I asked people around the league leading up to that day, what do you expect from the Senators? And a lot of people were like, yeah, we don't really know. We don't expect a lot. And then all of a sudden, he hits those two home runs, I think, in the Zetterlund trade and the Cousins trade. Like, I think Steve Staios deserves a lot of credit for how he handled that trade deadline. And time will tell about Zetterlund's ultimate fit and Cousins' fit. But on the surface, people were calling for Steve Staios to not just be steady. And we, in our own ways, through our writing, through the questions we've asked him, have made mention of the fact that they needed to address scoring. And they did it. So, yeah, I will give Staios credit.
Yeah, and they have been scoring, which is kind of the funniest part. Like it just immediately their uptick in goals just went boop. I guess before I let you guys go, because we do have a practice to go to, is there like I guess Graham, I'm gonna put you on the spot because why not? Does this team make the playoffs? And if so, how far do they go?
So even if they play Florida, like I feel like they have a puncher shot, right? Like I looking at Florida and their injury situation, you got the Aaron Ekblad suspension. Like there's a bunch of stuff going on with that team that that I'm kind of, even Sergei Bobrovsky, I don't think is having anywhere near as good of a season as he had last year. I think like if there's a chance to beat Florida, I think that like that's a ridiculously strong team. But I think if there is a chance to beat Florida, it's this season. If they face Washington in the first round, we've seen it all throughout this season. I think like Ottawa has done very well against Washington. So like that team doesn't concern me as much as it would a Florida team. But I think if Ottawa can win around and build some momentum and confidence, I think like they could go. I could see them going to the conference final, depending on matchups and everything else. Like if they play Tampa
Washington.
or Toronto, yeah, if they play like Tampa, Toronto, or like whoever they play in the second round or New Jersey or whatever, like I could see Ottawa making trouble. I don't think Ottawa is a team that many teams want to play. I think you look at their lineup, the depth up front. Obviously, it depends on the defense. Like their defense could be problematic if Jensen doesn't recover from injury and Shabbat doesn't play at a high level. I think that's the Achilles. But like, I don't think anybody wants to play Ottawa because if Linus Ullmark gets hot, if the forwards play well, I just think they can cause more problems for teams than they want to. They want to experience. I think like Brady Tkachuk being a menace at the Four Nations Cup kind of bolsters and solidifies that. So if they I think they'll either lose in the first round or they'll go like two or three rounds. That's just my take.
The Sens, for me, I think they're making the playoffs. I've said at the beginning of the year that they would make the playoffs when things were looking hairy for them in November. I still thought it was a possibility, and I'm happy that they've proven me right. Like, this is a team that if they put stuff together, they put their minds to it, they can make the playoffs. That I'm not worried about. In terms of matchups, if they get Washington, I think it's going seven, and I could see Ottawa winning. If it goes against Toronto, I could see that going seven. I could see Toronto winning. If it goes against Florida, I don't like that matchup as much for them. I think Florida, even if they're banged up, they would find a way to win. The two biggest things for me, well, actually, really three big things for me with this Ottawa Senators team entering the playoffs. I'm not as worried so much about the forward core, even if like Tim Stützle doesn't play like his absolute best in every game, because I feel the depth up and down that lineup will find ways to contribute some scoring. The defense has to step up. The health, ultimately, for everybody is like the underlying theme that this team needs. Everyone needs to be at full go. And one guy we have not really gone in on this podcast at all, Linus Ullmark. Linus Ullmark, if he has a bad series, forget it. It's over. And you can say that about any goaltender, but Linus Ullmark, just like the rest of this team, you could say it's been in tandem. Like, as Linus Ullmark has been good, this team has been good. And we've seen games where he has been like on the top of his game, top of the world. And then you have moments like against Toronto where, you know, if you're a goalie, tend the goal, right? Like when he's out here quoting Steve Dangle after allowing a really weird goal. Like he's had moments like that, or the weird goal he allowed against Nathan MacKinnon yesterday. Like if he's not playing well, you could forget about everything. It's, I think he's just, I mean, that's like, I guess it is for like that for every goalie, but I just think, especially for Linus Ullmark with how he's played this year, he has been that foundation. And if he is not that guy, I feel that Senators team is going to fold like a house of cards. That's just how important Linus Ullmark is to this team. It's not like Colorado where you could put in almost anybody in that net and you can rely on Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar to be your engines. This Ottawa team needs Linus Ullmark to be at his absolute best. And while I think he's shown that at different points this month, there have been other games where he hasn't shown that. And they need him to be that guy when the playoffs come.
No, it's funny. Like I just wrote a story this morning. Like Allmark's numbers since the All-Star break aren't, or since the Four Nations break are not that good.
Nope.
Obviously, he had the 48 save game against Detroit, and then obviously the crazy save against Boston that everyone will remember. But outside of those games, he's been a bit wobbly. So yeah, I think that's a bit of the.
I find his rebound control is just like a little bit off. But I will say too, Alex, like the team's not playing well structurally in front of
No.
him. They're not playing as clean as they were earlier in the season. So,
No.
like, I'll give him credit for that, but.
I think the one thing that I'm really curious about, and this is not even for this season, but just where does Levi Marilainen fit in the picture? Because I think he's been really good in
He's your
Belgium.
backup next year.
But I wonder if that's in 2, 3 years at the end of that Allmark deal, whether he's still the starter for this team. That's kind of my hot take. We'll see. But thanks so much, guys, for coming on and taking the time. This was a lot of fun. And I appreciate you giving me some predictions. So I will just not give one because you guys did it much better than me. But thanks so much for taking the time and doing this. And we'll do this again.
Coward.
I'll say
Coward.
the
You're
Sens
a
win.
coward. Make a prediction.
Okay. The Sens will make the playoffs and they will win a round. There you go. I think
Okay.
they'll
All
beat.
right.
And I didn't even put any, I didn't say if they play this or that team, just they'll win a round and then lose in the second round. That's my prediction. Yeah. I hope it's the Leafs because that would just be more just because I want them to play the Leafs because that would be just so much fun and just wild. Yeah.
Running out of time, man. They're running out of time. They got to make a push for those top three soon, or
Yeah.
else.
Yeah.
But
Well,
anyways, we'll see you guys at the rink.
see you guys, and thanks so much
Alex,
for
thanks a lot. Yep, thanks, man.